Today's program has been brought to you by Whole Foods Market, a dynamic leader in the quality food business, a mission-driven company that aims to set the standards of excellence for food retailers. For more information, visit wholefoodsmarket.com. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Yo, yo, this is Eddie Schumard live in the Heritage Radio Network studios in Bushwick, Brooklyn, behind Roberta's Pizza. You're listening to a special community session with Chef Deb Paquette from Etch in Nashville, Tennessee. Deb, thanks for being on with us today.
It's a pleasure.
Good. So you're in the Big Apple, up from the sweet Tennessee.
Yes,
what are you doing in the city?
Cooking, lots of cooking,
yeah.
Having fun and rediscovering the downtown Nashville area, and it's been fabulous.
So tell me a little bit about Etch. What's the word with Etch? What are you trying to accomplish?
Because
with
I want to scratch on everybody's brain where they need to be and where they need to eat and where they need to have fun in downtown. So it's more or less, and then we do give the kids Etch-a-Sketches to play with.
Oh, really?
So they'll remember us when they get grown.
That's fantastic.
Yeah.
So before Etch, you had your own restaurant, Zola.
Sure did.
And that was sort of one of the most acclaimed restaurants in Nashville in the South.
Yeah, kind of, sort of. Yeah.
And then you took this hiatus. Tell me about this sort of, you stepped away from the kitchen and went and lived in the island time.
Well, we were going to go live in the islands, and then we went to do a lot of interviews. My husband is a fisherman and had his own fly fishing business for many years. And we were going to travel and do it, and we were on a retainer to go to this island, and then the deal fell through. So we ended up going to do interviews, and then we ended up back in Nashville because I took a job.
So that was my
got paid.
Right. You know, you're a powerful woman chef, and I want to talk a little bit about sort of the female, you know, head chef, executive chef in a kitchen, because, you know, the world is dominated sort of by roughneck dudes.
You mean the guys with something between their legs?
Right, those
guys.
Yeah,
those guys. Yeah, I know them.
The guys
very well.
That want to make sure you know that that's there.
Oh, yeah.
So what was it like when you first started cooking, coming up through, you know, male-dominated kitchens?
Oh, some really, really, really good. But once I kicked boys' asses, they didn't like me a whole lot. You know, when I got a raise before they did, they didn't like me a whole lot. But then I said, hey, dudes, I just work my butt off. This is what I'm about. This is what I'm going to do. I'm ADD as hell. I have to go a million miles an hour. And I did. And I really zoomed up the ladder quickly. I think I did. Didn't get a lot of experience in big-time restaurants because back in the 70s and early 80s, the food thing was just sort of like you got a job cooking somewhere. You know, there weren't all these famous chefs or weren't all these big-time restaurants, and it's like you had to find your own direction. And then because I decided to have sex and make babies, that kind of made my life a lot different too. So being a woman in this business has been difficult between husband, wife, and restaurant.
Do you find yourself being sort of the mother of the kitchen?
Oh, yeah.
Is that transfers from home into the kitchen and back?
It's like having a body with 8,000 boobies, and everyone gets one. You know, it's so you have to be play the role, and I do it sometimes a little too much as the mom factor. But they love me. I think they love me, my staff now. I've had great kids work with me, and I try to teach them how to talk smack and how to get the work done at the same time.
Right, yeah. So do you find yourself, you know, when you first started cooking, probably had a male executive chef?
Or did
did you ever work with, like, a powerful woman in the kitchen? Was there, like, a role model?
No, never. I worked with a few women, and then I realized how much I really enjoyed it, and I tried to find more women, and it was really difficult back in the day. You know, I was probably the only woman waitress at the Last Supper. So, you know, I did work my way up. But I'm going to say that I have enjoyed working with men. Men have been my friends forever. I adore them. I'm married to one. I had two boys as kids. But I do make fun of them really well. I'm really good at it.
Yeah, the kitchen is an interesting environment. And, you know, we talked a little bit before about, you know, kitchen humor. Are there any, what's your favorite kitchen joke? And we're not FCC regulated, so you can,
oh, you know,
you can tell any joke you want.
I have many jokes, and I tell many, and then I hear many, and I can't remember them all. I mean, it's day to day. We just, you know, we banter constantly, you know, and we make jokes constantly. And, you know, my token gay guy, I asked him if he wanted to see my private parts the other day in case he missed out on something, you know. And I was like, he got a little blush, and I said, it's okay now. Maybe next week. Anyway, so... you know, it's just, I have to relate to them. I'm a lot older than them. I'm old enough to be, I'm older than most of their mothers. So, you know, people are amazed at my potty mouth, but I know when to keep it, you know, right. Where I have to keep it. And, you know, I like to go to the tables and tell jokes. And you feel at the table whether you can say the word penis or, you know, booby or more than that. So, you know, and food is our passion. And, but... I work 90 hours a week, you know, and besides having the passion for food, I have a passion for humor. So I will take it and run with it if someone lets me. You know, I have to have like a little catalyst. Right. And once I find that catalyst, whoop, over with, done.
So, I mean, you're talking about 90 hours in the kitchen. Why keep doing it? What draws you back to the kitchen day after day? Well, like what started?
Well, it's certainly not sex because my husband's in Cape Cod this summer because I work too much. So anyway... I am just an ever-ready battery. And, you know, you find those people in every business where you have to focus on the people who have that high energy. And it's really hard to find kids who have that anymore. It's a different kind of energy today. And so, you know, my pastry chef, my sous chef, and a couple of my cooks are just like zoom, 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 zoom. And you focus on them to help get the job done. And then you really have to work on the others. And then, you know, as my husband has always said to me, Dab, you can't expect everyone to be like you. And I'm like, why not? You know, but that's true. And I've learned that over the years. And you just work with people to try to make them the very best they can be. Give them that knowledge. Give them that tool to go out and work in the world.
So do you, you know, you talked about the banter and the give and the take with the boys in the kitchen and your staff. Do you feel that there's a similar back and forth in terms of techniques, trends? You know, are you passing down, you know, sort of your wisdom, and are you learning anything from these new guys? Are they, you know, coming in, like new equipment, new techniques?
I just had a conversation with a gentleman a couple hours ago about that, and... you know, I have to learn because I'm not fresh out of school and I didn't get the opportunity to be a techie and a scientist, and I've had to read a lot. I mean, Harold McGee is like my bedside Bible.
Yeah, he just was in the studios yesterday.
I know.
Missed him by one day.
I listened to it. Damn it. Oh, sorry.
It's okay. You can say worse than that.
Man, Harold, I would love to meet you. Can we go out on a date? I won't tell my husband. Don't tell your wife. Anyway, he's been my idol, which he is of so many chefs, you know, and there are so many more today. I've watched the progression of what's happened in the food business, and it is so amazing. So I'm between new school and old school. I mean, I have my circulators, and I have my CVAP, and I have my oven that smokes, you know, steams and cleans my toenails. So thank God, because I can't get to it. Anyway, so, you know, it's learning, and it's having the knowledge that you know that you have to learn to keep up with the world. And I do some fun and interesting things. I don't use a whole lot of chemicals, only ones that are natural. You know, I take the kids that come to me and I pick their brains. They pick mine. We're a little symbiotic relationship going on. If they got a big ego and they're all about themselves, it doesn't last for long.
Right.
Anyway, but it's good. And most of the kids work for me a year because they're on that learning parade, which is great. And I say, if you last a year, great. Other than that, get the hell out of here and let me get someone else new because
right.
I want to learn from them.
Yeah.
You know.
So, go ahead.
No. Oh. So it's a great journey. And, you know, I'm 56 years old. I'm still learning. I'm still active. You know, I have to stay in shape to keep up with them. You know, every time I go to the bathroom at my restaurant, there's a counter there, you know, where the basins are. I do 50 push-ups every time I go to the bathroom. I'm at least up to 1,000.
I think you have, like, you've got a whole separate gig going here, like the chef, like, in between workout. video.
Oh, you know, I did a kick head kick, to, and I can kick over most of the guys' heads there. And I didn't do so well a couple of weeks ago when I did the kick, but the garbage can got my way, and I fell on my butt. Luckily, my head hit the speed rack, but my butt hit the ground. It was pain. It was pure pain for about a month there, and they got a good laugh out of it. But I'm glad they got the laugh out of it, you know, just showing out that I can still
got it. Exactly.
But you have to do that. You know, when you got to prove that no matter how old you are, that you still have something that they don't.
Right, and I feel like that's sort of the culture of the kitchen in general. There's always this one-upman sort of ship. We're always like, oh, how fast did you clean that case of chickens? Like, so is there, do you get in those kind of races
contests?
In the kitchen?
Oh, yeah. Contests are great. We had one the other day with, what were we doing? We were peeling sunchokes or something.
Peeling things is always,
you know, but we were having fun and they were fun. And then we had to stop because we got an order. So you had to all stop the times and then start them back up again. I mean, you have to entertain yourself because the kids are doing a lot of the same work every day in any restaurant you go to, right. You know, especially like corporate chains, you're doing the same work. So you got to find something to challenge yourself and have fun with. But luckily we can deal with more creative stuff at my end and, pick brains of the kids and let them do fun and have fun and, yeah.
So is there, like, you talked about this, like, new equipment that you get to play with. Is there a new tool that's your new favorite? And is there a piece of equipment that you miss from, like, the Zola days? Is there, like, that piece that you're like, gosh, I wish I just had that hand blender or whatever it was?
You know, it's that old school turny thing. Now I'm using my hand so you know. You know, with that cup grater on it, and you put it down the chute and you turn the handle and it comes out this perfect grate, and it was so good for quick and fast things, even better than a mandolin. And I have all the parts at my house, but of course that one welded piece is missing. And you know, the wooden spoon will always be forever. I mean, I have a lot of them. I have to throw them out because the health department, if they get
right.
But paddles, wooden paddles. I go to the Asian store and get the wooden paddles. They're fabulous. New equipment. I have to say my Alto Sham oven is incredible. My baker does all her breads with the steaming unit. We smoke in it. And as I said, I have some really pretty toenails now. Anyway, so it's a fabulous. But the CVAP is my favorite, actually. I guess I have to say the CVAP controlled vapor oven, which is being used more and more and more. And I'm actually buying a new one pretty soon. Great piece of equipment. It's my sous chef's baby. He takes care of it. He cleans it. It's a learning tool. And actually, Barry, one of the chefs from Winston Industries, is coming down next week to work with us on some newer things with it. So we're pretty excited about that.
So the foods you're doing at Etch, you know, I don't think you could call it, you know, traditional Southern food or like the stereotype of Southern food. And I also read somewhere that you don't like the term global, like in terms of defining cuisine. Maybe it was a misquote, but you have this, there's a certain style in your menu. Where did that come from? Where are those influences coming from? And how did, you know, your trip to the Caribbean or your fascination with the Caribbean, how has that influenced? Where are you getting your ideas for food?
I'm a Florida girl, so I've always loved, you know, what the big chefs have done in South Florida, the Floribian thing, always fabulous. The influx of Latin cuisine with Caribbean cuisine. It's about big, bold flavors. And I love the chefs who can put it together and balance it all on the plate so well. So that is my goal in life. My goal is actually to cook food that people can't make in their homes. And so when they eat it, their tongue does the Watusi. I don't know if you all remember what the Watusi is, but anyway, does the happy dance. So anyway, I do a lot of Moroccan and Turkish, which is being done everywhere today. And I've been doing it for years. And just lately in my new restaurant, it's really kind of caught on. And I think because we have so many new foodies, we have a lot of people coming in from other states that are used to eating big, bold flavors. And, you know, it's not for everybody, but we have plenty of farm-to-table restaurants. And I've been buying fresh vegetables since I've been in Nashville since 1980-something. And now with the whole community, the Southern Alliance, I mean, everything that's happening now in the food world is just fabulous, thanks to Food Network and just people like you spreading the word. You know, I mean, Martha Stewart helped, of right. all people. You know, she, you know, and she helped us to set our tables for weddings. But anyway, you know, it's incredible to have watched it, and I'm glad I've been part of it, because when I started out of school, I went to work in New York City when I got out of school. I worked on Columbus between 73rd and 74th at a macrobiotic restaurant.
Really?
Oh, my God. It was the best thing I could have ever done in my life. I learned so much about yin and yang and balancing food and mixing and completing proteins that so many chefs don't get that experience, you know? So I came from a shrubberhead background, so I'm really big into shrubbery, which means people who don't eat meat. I went to a restaurant last night. It was fabulous.
What restaurant was that?
Pure Food and Wine. Okay. Oh, my God. I was so impressed. I want to go live there.
Are there any restaurants in New York you're trying to hit up? Like anything, like you're like, I have to go to this restaurant while I'm in New York City.
I've looked around, and I only have 3 days here, and I think I'm going to go to Gramercy just because it's just been there, and mm-hmm. I just want to see what they do, and I think I might come out to Brooklyn again and try a couple restaurants out here my next day. And I mean, you could spend a lifetime.
Right. Yeah.
Any ones you think I should
literally
go to?
There's a list. We'll go through it.
Oh my God. You know, but dining is just a sensory perception. It affects your olfactory system. It affects your ears. It affects your eyes, makes your butt twingle, and in between there. So, you know, I mean, it's the best industry, I think, to be in. I can't even think. And look, people are so crazy. I love it.
Yeah, that's my favorite part about the industry, is everybody's just a crazy person.
And you know, food people have the best tattoos.
Absolutely.
Oh my God.
Well, and they also make the best music, because half of them are in bands and they're working on
the
line.
Oh, that's true,
and,
too. You know, lots of bands.
There's always
oh
that
my God.
Great crossover. Like, what's like the food? I mean, like, I think of Nashville, Tennessee, and I think about music.
Oh, yeah.
What kind of, you know, what's the scene like in Nashville in terms of the food scene? How has it changed since you were there in the late 80s, you know, what, how has it developed? I mean, because you think of the South, and a lot of people don't associate, you know, fine cuisine or gastronomy or whatever you want to call it with the South. They sort of have this Paula Deen-ish
Don't
veil.
Get me started.
Oh, we'll get on Paula Deen and Southern food later.
Yeah. Well, when it was really hard for all chefs, you know, 25, 30 years ago, because people wouldn't come to Nashville. I mean, I met chefs in the Yankee states, they're like, well, what are you doing in Nashville? You know, and I remember talking to one chef on a plane who has two big restaurants in Boston, and we were talking the molecular gastronomy, and his comment was to me was, I'm surprised you know so much being from Nashville and all. Well, yes, and I still use corn cobs for you know what. So, I mean, I had articles written about my restaurant in the New York Times, you know, that we were the rhinestone cowboys. But see, it's the media kept portraying us as that kind of thing, you right. know, the meat and threes and what we're about. And that's all good. But, you know, we grew like any other city. And now, finally, in the past year to 2 years, you know, it took some chefs doing the whole local farm to table and how big we're into that. And it took other chefs to move back to Nashville. Bob Wagoner at Watermark and Sean Brock at his restaurant, mm-hmm. and, which we're very happy about. And they're great people. But a lot of other chefs are there, too, that are just doing a great job and doing their passion. And now we have people who support us.
Right.
So, and the music industry has kind of changed. The country music has kind of come back. You know, kind of helps with all those videos with the T&A going on, you know? And I'm in one of them, but I'm the one without the T. Anyway, so, you know, it's a lot of fun. It's a lot of fun to see it grow. And the real estate market is huge. I have friends in construction, and they're like nonstop. We just put a convention center in there, $585 million of convention center.
And that's right next to the restaurant, right?
Oh, yeah, yeah. yeah.
Mm-hmm. So, you know, I was looking at pictures of the restaurant, and it has a really modern feel, very minimalist sort of tone.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, how does that work with setting the tone in the restaurant? Is that something that you were a part of, or was that more?
Sort of, kind of. You know, yeah. we had a few architects in there, and it scared me because my restaurant was very romantic, old European kind of looking, and now I'm walking. I mean, my house that I live in is like a museum. I got caca everywhere, you know.
You can say shit. She has shit everywhere.
Okay, shit everywhere. Kind of shit. Yeah. Shit everywhere. Anyway, so it was really hard, but I went with it because, you know, everyone should try something new, you know. And I said, okay, the only way I will go work with you, you're talking colors that are brown, black, beige, white. I said, if I don't have red heat lamps hanging from the ceiling, I'm not coming to work there. And oh my God, I got those heat lamps in a heartbeat.
Yeah.
So anyway, it's like you walk in and the focus is the red heat lamps, and it's sort of like it's great. And I've learned to like it, and the chef's bar is doing great. People sit there and I get to talk to them when I'm not really busy, and sometimes I get my partner to expo so I can like talk to people and tell my stupid jokes and laugh and run to the line when they need me. And I have a great crew. I have no complaints. And they're a lot of fun. So the minimalistic, yep, it's working. I think people kind of get that big city feel.
Right.
And
but with the interaction, I mean, it sounds like you're really involved with the entire, you know, the entire restaurant. It's not like you're just stuck in the back and yelling at kids to go faster and cook smarter, but you're interacting, you're using it as a stage.
Oh,
so
yeah. And I have a little cattle prod in the back that I poke the kids with.
Of course you have to.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Well, we're going to take a quick break. We got Dedrick in the studio today. We have Deb Paquette from Etch in Nashville, Tennessee. You're listening to a special community session on heritageradionetwork.org. We'll be right back.
Thanks.
Today's program has been brought to you by Whole Foods Market. Washed rind cheeses are a fairly recent addition to the repertoires of artisanal cheesemakers in the United States. These cheeses tend to be stinkier than other types and are often high on the list of connoisseurs. Now, Whole Foods Market has come up with one of their own. The raw cow's milk cheese made by Sprout Creek Farm in Poughkeepsie, New York, is washed with 6-point ale from Red Hook, Brooklyn. The beige sticky rind deepens in color as it ages. The satiny ivory cheese within is mellow with a sweetly tangy bite and a grassy aroma. The current version features 6-point diesel, which is in limited supply, so stop by and pick up some before it's gone. And point of origin cheese is sold exclusively at Whole Foods Market in New York, Northern New Jersey, and Connecticut. For more information, visit WholeFoodsMarket.com.
Coming back live in the studios at Bushwick, Brooklyn, behind Roberta's. Today in the studios is Chef Deb Paquette from Etch in Nashville, Tennessee. And we're talking about Southern food and minimalists and interacting and bad jokes in the kitchen and teaching the young kids how to cook and passing knowledge around. So Southern food has been stereotyped.
Mm-hmm.
How do you work around that? How do you represent sort of living in Nashville and, you know, the Southern food heritage, the real Southern food that a lot of people don't know about, and step outside and cook with big, big, bold flavors?
I was raised with a dad from Claxton, Georgia. We grew up on mushy food. I mean, it always tasted good. My grandma made, like, you know, ham hocks and beans and liver stew and hot water cornbread and cooked down squash. I mean, you know. And then my mom went into the health food business, as the term was many years ago. You know, she had a little health food store and in Fort Lauderdale, Florida. So I kind of learned that eating that way is not always the best. So I learned about different kinds of foods. And, you know, when I moved to Nashville, I realized that the mainstay that everybody talked about was meat and threes and meat and threes and meat and threes. And I saw a lot of people who might want to challenge their taste buds. And so, you know, I threw some Southern influence because of the ingredients we have available to us. But I also realized, like in Turkey, they use a shitload of okra. Oh, my God. You know, so why can't I use okra? And I love okra, but people don't want to eat salami okra, so I started grilling okra. And I'm talking like 25 years ago, I started grilling okra. And I grilled okra, and I put it in these flower pots, and I served sauces with them, and people went gaga goo goo. And then I have found this farmer who is a Buddhist, and he goes to Burma, and he brought back these incredible okra seeds, that Burmese okra, that are about
6-7 inches.
Maybe longer. I compared them to the last man I went out with. 12, 12 they're inches. About 8 inches.
It's like a fish now.
Anyway, so, or a fish. Anyway, so, oh my God, people were so intrigued. And because when you grill okra, it's not salami. It's fabulous. And then all of a sudden, about 2 years later, I noticed all the restaurants in Nashville. And I'm not gurming on myself. It's just that, like, I was like, okra. Why are they all cooking it out and cooking it down? I mean, I love stewed tomatoes and okra. But how am I going to get people to eat okra?
Right.
You know, so I started grilling the okra. And as I said, this was a long time ago. I think it was B.C., before children.
Right.
Anyway, so, and then you just made funky sauces and people were ordering it like crazy. And then I put one of those big okras across a plate and look all kind of fun and funky. And, you know, so the I used beets to my benefit. I couldn't get people to eat beets. I was like, oh, my God, I love beets. So, you know, started roasting the beets, which has been done for a long time. Now everybody's roasting beets. I was like, how am I going to get people to eat beets? So I breaded them in pecans and deep fried them.
Right. You can deep fry anything and pretty much everybody's going to get on board with that.
Yeah. So I had to kind of touch the southern roots, got the deep fry thing, the pecan thing, and then my beets, which a lot of people just only ate pickled beets. And then the rest of the world didn't eat beets.
Right.
So, you know, and or those things in the cans, you know. I was in a one of the Share Our Strength books of recipes years ago, and they wanted things from the past, and I wrote my things about beets. You know, my dog loved beets. My kids loved beets. My mother had to tell them one night, no more beets till you finish your dinner. I mean, they love beets. I mean, I still use beets. When I can't find my lipstick to go out in the restaurant, I go over, I grab a beet, rub it on my lips. It's perfect.
Did you hear that, ladies? That's a quick tip. Quick tips.
It's beets. Carry a beet in your pocket at all times. Anyway. Well, not really.
Yeah.
But anyway. So anyway. But, you know, it's just the southern thing has been great. It's and, you know, now we have these farmers with all the homemade pigs and homemade cows and homemade everything. And it's fabulous and it's fun. And you have to check it all out. Some is a lot, you know, some is great, some is greater. I buy a fabulous hamburger meat from one of my local farmers. I get a lot of vegetables from a guy I've been buying vegetables for 20 years.
From the same guy?
Same guy. I was like one of his first customers.
So is there anything like Nashville specific, like something that you source either seasonally or on a regular basis that it's something sort of unique to Tennessee and Nashville? Is there something that you really are drawn to that's specific or?
I would say we've got a great trout farm, a couple of them. Bob White's trout, really great. Specifically, you know, I don't really have anything specific.
Is there something like a season that you get excited, like, oh, it's going to be
yes,
X season?
Yes, yes. Bob Wagoner once, he did TV shows from the East, Turner Broadcasting East, and he came and filmed us one time. And we must have picked about 20 pounds of chanterelles out of the woods behind my house.
Behind your house?
Oh, my God.
I'm coming over.
Oh, my God. And you know what? This is funny. My husband just had to come home last week, and he went and picked them and brought them to Cape Cod with him so he could share them with his buddies. And I would say my husband is a forager and a fisherman. I mean, if I had to live with anybody to help me survive, it would be him.
So you chose wisely.
Yeah. Yeah, and he knows what I like, too.
Does that influence your cooking at all? Like, you know, having a fisherman husband and forager? I mean, has he ever come home with stuff and's like,
oh, my God.
Cook it.
He made, no. He's catch and release. He has rules.
He's a sportsman.
Well, he has rules. But on the Cape now, he has to catch because it's what the people want. And he wants to sell tunas to the guys on the dock, you know. It's called income.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Anyway, when he has brought home fish, it's usually crappie because they're the bunnies of the sea, and they're really good. Crappie is if I could sell crappie on my menu, I would. It's so sweet. And so
why fabulous. Couldn't you sell it on the menu?
Because nobody's.
Is it like one of the trash fishes?
It's like everywhere, but no one. It's not. you know, for nobody sells it. I don't know. It's not. I don't
be
think
the first. Be the first crappies.
I better not say anything else. Shh.
Yeah. Shh.
Anyway, so we've had morels in our backyard, chanterelles, and of course a lot of oyster mushrooms, and you know, my kids would go pick them and sell them. So, you know, it's probably my favorite part. Is that my phone?
Mm-hmm.
Oh my God, I'm so sorry. You know, I hate phones, and I just forget that they have an on and off switch. Anyway, so I would say that's probably my favorite part, and my husband has become a fabulous cook, and he's made like these fabulous chanterelle cheddar cheese pies. Oh, they're to die for. We took it to a party one time. It looked like a dessert, and the kids dug in.
Tricked you.
These little boys down the street. You should have seen their faces.
the sweet savory bait and switch.
Because we live in the South, and a lot of my neighbors are total big Southerners, you know? I mean, big time. And they forage big time, and they grow incredible gardens. These are the guys who are retired, okay? And you walk by them, and you look at their garden, you go, retired, not retired. Little garden, not retired. Big garden, retired. You know, so we have so much great stuff in the, you know.
Yeah, it sounds like you mean Nashville and Tennessee in general has sort of been ahead of the curve, quietly growing their own food and doing the local regional thing before everybody else sort of jumped on the bandwagon.
Yeah, and then we have the Mennonites, and we have the, what are they called? What's the other group? Starts with an A.
The Amish?
Amish, yes, sorry. Sorry, Amish people. Anyway, I mean, we have fabulous vegetables that come from their gardens, all organic. I mean, they use no electricity. They make their own sorghum. They make their own jams. No electricity, horse-driven fires. And we get a lot of stuff from them, and it's primo. So a lot of my farmers go up there and get stuff and bring it down when they can't, when their garden kind of screws up or something.
Right.
But we have a lot of cool stuff.
Is that something you think about consciously? Is like, where is this coming from? And is that a conversation that happens in the restaurant? Or is it just so commonplace now that you don't even, it's just...
Oh, it's some of both, because you know that the organic stuff is really expensive.
Right.
And remember, when you're in the restaurant business, the hardest thing to remember is that you want to make a profit.
Right.
So you have to do a balancing act, and you do the best you can. I mean, you know, can I get onions organically year-round? No. They come from one of those people, mm-hmm. you know? You just don't think about it. But you try to do the best you can to maintain a good balance. And that's what we do. And my partners are pretty happy with the end results. And the public has been fabbed by my restaurant. And I can't complain. And I just have to keep it up. And I can't wait to go back and do more vegan food after my meal last night.
Oh, yeah.
I do.
Is that something, I mean, there's another Southern sort of food stereotype. Is that you talked about earlier, like the meat and two veg. You know, the 3-point landing on a plate and meat centric dining in the South. I mean, is that something that you're trying to, you know, break away from and introduce more vegetarian vegan fare on your menu? Is that something that the Nashville community is looking for?
Yes. And we have a big call for it, especially because everyone has a disease today. It's something they can't eat. So we accommodate, and I have no problem with that. Over half of my menu can be changed within a click to become non-gluten or vegan or vegetarian. And I'm always there running around. If someone's vegan, I can run to the blender and whip them up something without dairy in a heartbeat. And people know that, and they respect that. My old restaurant, I had a separate vegetarian menu, and I am working on that slowly but surely, but we're so new, we're overwhelmed. I asked them to please call me. I will take care of you. I'll make you something vegan, vegetarian. I mean, I have, you know, we have a lot of that. But I think since they know that a lot of restaurants today will accommodate them, you can go out and eat today, which
right.
is great. And, I mean, last night, you know, the restaurant I went to was packed.
Oh, yeah.
And I was like, I would love this, maybe in my next life. But people still have to have their protein, and they're getting better about eating vegetables and wanting a vegetarian meal. And luckily, my husband, we stopped and he got a piece of meat before we went to the vegan restaurant. No, not really. He wanted to, but I said, no way, dude. But anyway, yes, it is bigger and better. And I have always been accommodating for vegetarians because I love it. I love
I think that's a unique thing because a lot of times you see menus and there's that bold statement at the bottom, and I've used it in my restaurants before or in the restaurants I've worked in, is the no substitutions, no changing, this is my thing, and if you want to change it, you should have cooked it at your house. Sort of attitude in kitchens, like, I don't want a substitution, This is the menu I made. And I like that you are open and willing to say, yeah, you want something vegetarian or vegan, I'm a chef, I'll make something for you.
Yeah. I mean, and it makes them feel so special.
That's that Southern hospitality, I think.
Oh, yeah, I got real big hospitality, yeah. Mm-hmm.
So while we're on a Southern hospitality tip, we have to talk about, the big news of the day. Paula Deen.
I just want
to hear your reaction to the reaction.
I just think that butter went to her brain. Finally. Got it. Made it. Mm-hmm. I know that I put my foot in my mouth a few times with the media. She could have avoided it. And I don't know. Maybe she was ready to quit or something. I don't know.
Do you think the reaction is worthwhile? Representative of this? Because she's made her name as sort of this representative of Southern cooking, where a lot of Southern cooks are like, you're not making Southern food. You're making this bastard child of Southern food wrapped in bacon, slathered in mayonnaise, and deep fried. And as this ambassador, she's made,
She is. She's an act of her own. If she didn't have the personality she did, she might not have been able to pull it off. But it's her voice, the way she looks at you, her hairdo. She is the epitome of the South. And I think because she cracks her jokes and you just watch her. I mean, I've sat there and watched her and go, oh, my God, she's great at what she does. She's a good TV persona. And I think people watch her she does it and people are grossed out, but they keep watching her because they'd like to be grossed out, So I think what she did, it wasn't right. And it was a while ago. And look at what some of our presidents have done. Look at what some of our senators and congressmen have done that have been publicly out there, and we've dealt with it and forgiven them. And they're still in the media. Mm-hmm. I'm sorry. She made a mistake. And whether the public forgives her or not, but she'll have to deal with it. Look at Martha Stewart.
Right.
She came back.
Yeah. I think there's enough. There's enough for supporters out there.
Maybe if she colors her head red, puts a couple streaks in it, loses a few pounds, maybe she can come back as. Maybe she can.
Paula Deen's PR. I hope you're listening because we've got some great ideas.
Maybe she
for
can
you.
Sell sex toys with butter on the side. Okay, I don't know. Anyway, but she's...
Speaking of publicists, yours is getting a little blush in the face over there.
That's okay. You know what? It's all about having fun. Life's too short. You got to make the best you can of it. We all have our ups and downs, and, Paula Deen had hers, and, she's going to have to do a lot of forgiving. Hopefully she has a good pair of knee pads.
Yeah. You heard it here first. So, as a name brand in Nashville, Tennessee food scene, and as this, respected chef, how do you work with the community? What kind of outreach do you have?
Oh, lots.
And, what are your, what is, for you in the food movement, and I'll use that term with quotes on the outside, what's the issue for you right now? Is it food access? Is it hunger? Is it poverty? What is sort of the thing that you wish people would talk about more when they're eating together?
Well, I have been part of Share Our Strength for many years, and then I did it for so long, and then I've changed. And now in Nashville, of course, every city has huge, huge charities, and we do a lot of them, and a lot of them do with hunger. I am part of the Taste of NFL, which was the mm-hmm. second harvest, and we're going to get ready to do an event. Hopefully, we're working on it. Our one-year anniversary is in August, and I hope to have a charity event for Second Harvest in lieu of that. And I have always done really good things for them. Now, I'm a really, really busy chef. So it's really right now, our first year is this restaurant. We haven't found exactly our way with every organization. In my last restaurant, oh, God, we did everything. But I really like working with the kids, teaching them about food. Obesity is a big problem. I'm very happy with all the chefs that can help with all of that. It's a little hard for me because I'm still a working chef.
Right.
And it's really hard to get dialed into a lot of the programs when you're on the line all the time. So my goal is to work myself off the line a little bit more so I can work on more organizations. My long-term goal, I was just telling Jamie, is to win the lottery, and I want to have a circus for handicapped kids because I want to teach them how to like tightrope, because you can take a kid with no arms and strap them on, and they're the fulcrum, and with the weights, and they can walk a tightrope. I want them to have the costumes and ride the elephants and work with the poodles and ride unicycles, because I ride a unicycle. And I always
thought,
you know, you're the fulcrum again, and you use your arms as the weight. So you can take a kid and, you know, put weights, strap them on, and you can work with them to teach them how to do things they don't know how to do. So someday I hope that will be my dream, to work with children and get them have fun. I mean, everyone always wanted to go to the circus when they're a kid, you know, and everyone's, that's fun stuff. That's right. Cool stuff, you know? So I know that's not real food oriented, but I'm all about the kids, you know, and making their lives fun and having them something to remember. I was a camp counselor for years. Can you tell? That's before I got in the kitchens and I learned about potty mouth.
Yeah.
But you know, kids are always been a big part of my life and working with them. So everywhere I go, I try to talk to kids about eating and food and what they should be doing in their lives. And everybody, I just told my friend over here about aloe vera juice and how it will help her ulcer.
Spreading knowledge.
But yes, I am full of helping many organizations, and there's a long list of them. So,
yeah. Well, I mean, I think the theme I'm getting is that you are mama. You're the mama of the kitchen. You're mama in Nashville, and you're spreading the love, and you're making people have fun, but work really hard while they're doing it. And I think that's my favorite part
hard
of the
work.
Kitchen culture, is work hard, party harder, and then wake up and do it better the next day.
Well, I've kind of cut down on the partying part, but
I don't buy it.
The kids that I work for, woo, baby. But, you know, by 2 o'clock in the afternoon, they got their act together and they're ready to go. And we go till the hours and, you know, do it all over again. And I mean, you know, that's what it's, you know, you're a chef. You know, it's a great business. People like go, oh, it's so hard. But, you know, it's not really hard if it's what you love.
Right. Well, we're just about out of time. Deb.
No way. I just got going.
I know. It goes by in a flash. Chef Deb Paquette of Etch in Nashville, Tennessee. Go visit her. Try some of those big, bold flavors down in Tennessee. Catch some good country music.
Yep.
Eat some of that local fare.
Yeah.
And Chef Deb, thanks for coming on today.
It's been
an absolute joy.
Can't wait to eat a pizza.
All right, kids. You've been listening to a special community session on heritageradionetwork.org. Remember, we're a member-supported radio network, so go on the website and click donate. You can listen to this show and any others archived on our website, iTunes and Stitcher. Dedrick, thanks for engineering today.
Yo,
Deb,
yo.
Thanks again for being here. We'll
sure
see
thing.
You later, kids.
Bye now.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.